Do you feel like you're here we go again kind of moment going?
Yeah, it's kind of deja vu, isn't it? It's same thing, all politically charged, motivated, and it doesn't have to be that way, and it could be handled effectively. There's obviously I have a lot of opinion on the topic. First and foremost, if I don't know if people realize it, but 80 of our 87 county sheriffs do not comply with ICE. And that means if they have a person in their custody in their jail facility that is wanted on an immigration hold, rather than turn that person safely over to ICE, you know, from the jail to the Sally Port to the squad car to be deported, they hide them from ICE and they slip them out the back door without notifying ICE if they're there even. It's that bad that 80 of our 87 county sheriffs don't comply. So a lot of these people could be on their way with near compliance, but it's all political and they don't. So a lot of the people they're after would not be here to begin with because they would have been safely removed. So instead, they choose to release them into the community where you encounter not just them, but all the people interfering and obstructing legal process, as happened with the two recently deceased people.
By the way, Chicago doesn't even do that. The city of Chicago is cooperating. So think right. of the level of radicalism in Minnesota. You're saying to me, and I get the Minneapolis PD. I mean, you don't get more woke than they do, or that Democratic Socialist of America, you know, city council that's just gone nuts way out there.
Exactly.
I get them, but you're telling me 80 of 87 sheriffs think it's a good idea to not
correct.
Cooperate
that's
with ICE?
Said. Yes. Yes. And, you know, think about the danger that places everyone in, the agents, the fugitives, and all these bystanders, the protesters, the disruptors. I mean, if you would, what's safer than removing a person from a secured and confinement facility and going straight to deportation? That's where you begin. But that's politically charged. And then you just mentioned Chicago. Look at some other states like Illinois, Florida, California, where they have large populations, much larger populations, Texas, for example, of illegal immigrants, and you don't have any of this occurring. You know, I shouldn't say California, I guess, because they're just like Minnesota in that respect. But certainly Texas, Florida, southern states like that, you have a larger population of illegals, and they're not experiencing the problems they have because they're deported in that fashion. They don't have the governor and the mayors of these large cities encouraging disruption and obstructing legal process with the protests. Instead, they don't participate in the rhetoric, and they safely remove a larger number of individuals than they're doing in Minnesota. And then you look at historically the presidents, you know, back to Obama, they've removed a lot more. The Obama and Clinton regime removed a lot more illegal immigrants than Trump's doing, and they didn't have the kind of blowback. Those are all factors that people seem to forget about in the mess. I know we're going to talk about the shooting, but I think it's important to note that that's the backdrop of all of this.
Yeah, and by the way, there's been some decent reporting this weekend about this. I would call it a criminal enterprise that even political leaders are part of. Some former Wall staffer and Peggy Flanagan, the lieutenant governor, that are in this this communications network and coordinating all of this and telling
yes.
people.
Yep.
I mean, and is that new or is that something that has been part of the problem in Minneapolis for a while?
I'm sure it's been a part of the problem. I suspect it's been a part of the problem for quite a while. I mean, it's top down. Corruption in this government. And then another thing that plays right into the hands of the Democrats is, remember, they were under the microscope for all of this billions of dollars of various fraud. Well, guess what? When's the last time you've heard about fraud investigations now? So it's masking the real problem at hand. So they love seeing this happen because it deflects from what the issue they were under the microscope before, and that's the wide-scale fraud. Which links directly to the politicians we're talking about, mayors, governor.
I was glad to see that President Trump, in talking about the call with Walls, no, it was actually before that. He talked about, he might have done it in both. He put out a tweet that Tom Homan was being deployed there. And he mentioned specifically,
yes.
You know, to help, but also mentioned the fraud. So, you know, I think that, you know, obviously it needs to be front and center because, you're exactly right. This incompetence and really criminal behavior is—it's impossible to believe they aren't all aware and all of it needs, this is so much so bad, it just needs to be dealt with. So I was glad to see the president keep that front and center.
Exactly. And speaking of De Jure, let's not forget, you know, in 2020, they needed to unseat President Trump. So what happened? We had COVID and then we had the riots. And Minneapolis was the flashpoint for it there, too. And I think that directly impacted the election and whatnot. So, it's deja vu all over again in that respect with Minnesota and our politicians.
So as a guy that obviously has time in the Minneapolis Police Department as lieutenant and president of Minnesota Minneapolis Police Union, if we were to talk to everybody from, you know, except the chief and 10 of the yes men below them, what does Minneapolis police think about this right now?
Well, they're very disheartened. It's a national black eye that they've got as an incompetent, ineffective agency. And it's saddening for me and other retirees to see, because I arguably throughout my 32 years there, I would have said we had one of the finest police departments in the country. And that has certainly changed, and it's changed from the top. And it's not that the officers are frustrated, because they want to go and help and do their job. And they're prohibited to. You've seen the chief make an ass of himself on national television, how this guy with any integrity can stay in that role. And, you know, I've had friends that have been through, you know, command schools and to prepare them to be chiefs. And one of the biggest takeaways is that any time you should have your resignation letter be written to resign as chief. If you cannot stomach what they're forcing you to do politically, have the intestinal fortitude to say, I'm done, I won't participate in this. Obviously, Chief Ryan O'Hara has a completely different take on that, because he's doing whatever pandering he's directed to do. It's sad.
I always assumed he was one of them.
I
mean,
he
doesn't even live there, right? His wife is some radical Muslim that lives forget where. And, you know, I mean,
it's crazy.
Do you think it's him, or do you think he's, I got to dance for my dinner? It seems to me that he's,
He's dancing for the dinner. He's up for reappointment right now. In fact, this month, he's up for his term is ending, so he's up for reappointment. So dance for the dinner is a good way to frame it up. But I really think he's a believer in along those lines myself.
Okay.
I don't know him personally. He came after I had retired.
All right. One of the things I've struggled
with. I can tell your rank and file is very frustrated.
Yeah, I figured as much. And it sounds like there's a lot of that to go around. Politically, I'm hearing a lot of things about how, you know, everybody's furious with walls. Even, you know, like Jacob Fry and other of the what looks to be the cabal down there. And that his wife is kind of the radical of all radicals. And so he's, you know, he's got to dance for his dinner, too, just for his wife, for crying out loud. So it's it's a big mess. Here's my big question for you. Again, million different angles, million different opinions. Seems like, whatever you see is sort of what you want to see. But from a pure X's and O's standpoint, of someone that knows law enforcement, of the time we've seen the videos from when this Alex Pretty first is seen on camera to when the shots happen, what is your view of what happened?
Sure. And a little, I think a backdrop is important on this. And that is going back to when Ms. Good was shot and killed. Prior to that, if the officers would be allowed to do their job, and that is make arrests for obstructing legal process, early on, and I've been in charge of riots and protests and things like that, to properly do this when they're being interfered with, like these agents are, to make mass arrests, have buses stand by, transport these troublemakers, arrestees out of there, book them into a jail facility. You set that tone from the very beginning, and none of these things continue day after day, because they say, hey, they're not playing, they're making arrests, I don't need to go to jail. And it tamps all of this down. So it may very well be that it wasn't that large a scale, certainly for the last shooting or even the prior shooting. But when you look at jumping to the most recent shooting, the Pretty shooting now, that you look at the behavior that occurred there, and he's standing in the 2600 block of Nicollet Avenue, and that was my first 3 years on the police department. That was my district. That has always been an extremely busy area, traffic-wise, pedestrian-wise, otherwise. He's standing in the middle of the street, in the middle of the 2600 block. He didn't cross at the crosswalk at 26. He didn't cross at the crosswalk at 27. He's out there in brown clothing pretending to be some type of traffic cop. Right there, that's against the law.
Yeah, I saw that. He's waving people through and stopping others. Hold that thought, Lieutenant, if you would. We're going to take a short break and come back with more of your description of the scene. And by the way, I couldn't agree with you anymore. And as I understand it, Minneapolis police could help with crowd control. That's not prevented in their sanctuary cities thing. They're not doing operations of illegals. They're keeping the peace, and they won't even do that. So you're right. That's what's led to this for sure. More after this. Of what you've seen, describe this from the perspective of who's right, who's wrong, and typical law enforcement practice here.
Start with him in the middle of traffic, obstructing traffic flow. He's violating city ordinance. If Minneapolis police could have stopped him and cited him for that and removed him from the situation right there, they didn't because they're not allowed to. This was prior to having any physical contact with the agents. So then you fast forward, you can see that the agents are dealing with another female there that's obstructing. They push her down. They go to make an arrest. And what does he do? He gets in, he blocks, puts his arm up and pushes off on an agent himself. And then he tries to blanket her to keep her from them going hands on with her. So at that point, he's obstructing legal process. Again, could have and should have been arrested. So before any physical struggle ensues, he's violated at least two crimes and could have been arrested by Minneapolis officers standing by. He continues to resist verbal commands. The fight ensues. Obviously, if you've seen any of the other footage, the agents have done a lot of pushing and pulling and never physical strikes. So when I saw that first, when they were delivering the blows that they were, punches like that, I said, this guy's got to be armed because they haven't done this before. I've seen a lot of grabbing and pushing and pulling, but never physical strikes. And I thought right away he's armed. They see a gun because they're trying to incapacitate him. Turned out that was the case. It's very tough and grainy there, but obviously he's obstructing legal process. He's armed with a handgun. Add to that, you've got this hostile crowd around you. They're blowing whistles. They're making all kinds of noise. It makes it very difficult for the officers in that situation to hear each other, to communicate. So it'll all come out at the end of the investigation on if someone yelled gun, what they saw, why they fired. That'll all come out in the end. But in my opinion, it's a justifiable shooting, and here's the key reason why. You don't get in real time the luxury of slow motion, rewind, back up, let's watch it again, like you and I and everyone else has been doing with this, frame by frame. What justifies an officer's shooting is a reasonable officer in the same set of circumstances at that time. They don't have the pleasure of slowing things down or rewinding. It's their perception at that time. That's what's going to be key to this, and that's why I think this is going to be a justifiable shooting, is because the officers seeing a guy resist their efforts to arrest someone, obstructs legal process, all of a sudden he's armed, is he going for the gun? What goes through their mind in that split second? And what they know is they're dealing with a combative subject that is armed. I don't know if someone saw him go for the gun. I don't know if someone removed the gun. We don't know if the gun went off. We don't know if the gun was went off when he was being disarmed. All those questions will come out, but it's the set of circumstances at that time for any reasonable officer, and I think any reasonable officer in the situation would have had cause to fire.
Two quick questions now, for you. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask.
The only other.
Go ahead.
The only other factors I was going to add to that is he's got an extensive weapon, a lot of ammunition, high capacity magazines full. He's got a concealed carry. Now, it's been reported that he didn't have identification. He didn't have his concealed carry permit on him. That invalidates the concealed carry. The other thing is it violates every bit of training a person has when they go through a concealed carry class. And that is, one, you don't go to a not-so-peaceful protest armed like that. And two, if you have interaction with law enforcement, you keep your hands away from your firearm, clearly visible, state that you have a firearm and you have a permit to carry and you are armed, what would you like me to do? If that's a traffic stop, your hands are on the steering wheel. Officer, I have a permit to carry, and I am armed. What would you like me to do?
Yeah.
Obviously, fighting with them is not taking that. So he violated every bit of training in a permit to carry.
Yeah, I'm not going to play Columbo here, but it seems to me if he brought that there, maybe he was. How does an ICU nurse that gets up every day to save veterans' lives end up in a position of taking a gun to that protest to do what they did? I just, unless he intended to use it in some way to take out law enforcement and right. whipped into that frenzy. And again, until, like you said earlier.
And remember, people that are, that are on the fringe mentally, they get encouraged by this rhetoric that's spewed by Walls and Fry and company telling them, to take arms and take to the streets.
So sad.
They're putting that out there.